Welcome to the Minivade Gang Podcast for Saturday, August 22nd, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and on with me is Phil Wilson.
Hi there.
And Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Hello.
And Graham Thickens is up driving around somewhere in northern Minnesota. And Tim, believe it or not, is on a one-day driving adventure down to Atlanta. He left like at 3 in the morning. So I don't know what he's doing down there, but...
You know, he and I were talking through that whole concept. We were on our way, I think it was to Blogwell, and we were talking about that. And he was doing the math in his head, what would be cheaper, to do the drive or to ship the car or whatever. So
oh, fascinating.
He came to the right conclusion that it was time to drive.
Yeah. Huh. How about that? Well, there's so much going on the net and in the past week that I've just been stunned with some of the things. Now, this was talked about on This Week in Tech with Leo Laporte, but Anil Dash, who's the evangelist Six Apart, that does TypePad and Movable Type, did this post called The Push Button Web, and it was really picked up and talked about by a lot of different thought leaders. Not a new concept, because Posterous has actually done it, and PixelPipe, which is the hey, I'm going to publish an image or a video or whatever, and I want it to blast out to all my different places. And then, you know, I'm wondering why he was doing it. And then, of course, TypePad themselves announce that they're enabling microblogging in the same way, which is you can microblog to TypePad and then have it be pushed out to other services. So, and I kind of touched on this too in that social media breakfast talk that I gave at Deluxe about aggregating your digital life. And you, Julio, you're doing it now. You're active in Posterous.
Yeah. I love Posterous because, it lets me do two things. It lets me create a kind of a personal live stream where I can throw up tidbits that are not appropriate necessarily for my tech blog, but it's also a gateway to all my other services. So I know that if I push something up to Posterous, Posterous will then push it to other places. You know, video will get pushed to Flickr and YouTube. Pictures will get sent to, you know, Facebook and Flickr and so on. And so it's peace of mind, because I just send stuff to one place and I know all my networks will get pinged in short order. And you know, there's some iPhone app. I think you mentioned PixelPipe. There's another one called Shozu. There may be more. You know, there are like iPhone apps that, you know, perform, you know, similar functions where, you know, you push something up to the web, you know, via one of these apps, and then it gets pushed to multiple places. I'm sticking with Posterous because I just find it so elegant. It's very easy to do in an email. You can customize the email address to sort of pick and choose which services you want to push to.
Yep.
But that whole concept is just kind of mind blowing for me. It's still so exciting. The novelty hasn't worn off. Yesterday I just went on a rampage of, you know, posting video clips for, you know, upcoming science fiction movies and series, and I'm kind of a sci-fi geek, and it was kind of cool how, you know, all my Facebook friends, you know, instantly were notified, my Twitter friends were notified. It was all just ridiculously fast and easy.
Yeah. Well, I find the same thing, that it's I personally love the ability to now, whenever the moment strikes, I can do video, I can do audio, images, and post stuff, these services are godsend in so many different ways. The only thing is, though, as one downside, I can't tell you how many times I've tried posting something, and it's ended up at a service where I went, "Whoops!" and because I didn't want it there, I goofed up basically. Same thing with Google Reader, which has been really fascinating about how Google Reader added the send to function, which I find really nice, because you can also customize it with custom send tos. So if there's an article that I think is fabulous, I can send it to Posterous or I can send it to Twitter. And Twitter just is the headline with a shortened URL. But here's the kicker. I did this just as a test. So I sent a post to Posterous. It put the entire post into my Posterous, And then in turn, it sent it to my blog because I had forgotten to just send it just to Posterous. And so I ended up with somebody else's post in both Posterous and my own blog.
Oops.
Yeah. So there's some of that stuff that has to kind of get ironed out in terms of our own personal workflow.
Let me kind of get step back just a second.
Yeah.
Probe a little bit further because you both are active in Posterous and live streaming. Tell me about who is the end recipient of all this live streaming that you're doing? Who do you envision as your audience for this?
Well, the point is we're so active in social media and on the web that our audiences, that we have multiple audiences. We have Twitter friends, we have Facebook friends. Other people follow us on Flickr. Like, my mother follows me on Facebook, but not on Twitter. But then I have all these Twitter friends that don't have any idea what's going on in my Facebook. All this fragmentation is a problem, and Posterous is an elegant way to solve it because if you want to let all of your various audiences, you know, plural, know what's going on with you, you can either go to each service and, you know, upload content, you know, multiple times, or just push it to Posterous, and then Posterous pushes it out to all these places. Yeah. And so all your peeps everywhere know what the hell is going on with you, and you've invested very little time in letting them know.
But I'll also point to the one huge benefit that I pointed out in that talk that I gave at SMB, which is this: how many services have you guys used that have ended up in the dead pool where now they're gone and all your data is sitting there? And this way, you know, God forbid Posterous goes out of business. Guess what? The images that I did, they're in my Flickr account. The videos that I uploaded are in my YouTube account, on and on. And it's unlikely that all those other services are going to go down as well. So it has that added benefit of ensuring that your digital assets aren't sitting in one specific place necessarily.
So do both of you feed your Twitter to Facebook?
I was doing that, but I stopped because it seemed to be a lot of needless duplication, and I got some complaints about it. So I don't do a lot of stuff directly on Facebook, but, you know, anything I do in Posterous goes to Facebook, and that kind of fits pretty well for me.
Well, and I do, and my daughter Biz said to me, "Dad, why do you have your Twitter going into your Facebook?" She goes, "Don't you know that people just hate that? They just hate that."
Well, they do. not that they hate it, because some people don't. Some people look at it, but it's two different audiences. I look at it as, I mean, again, I haven't spent enough time with Posterous. I do have a Posterous account. I've got that set up, but I haven't really played with it as much as you guys have. Yes, there's this ease of being able to post a lot of different things at a lot of, you know, all at one time. But there's also that conflict of you use a different voice for different things. My Twitter voice is different than my Facebook voice. My Facebook voice is far more social, and very rarely do I have a lot of business stuff going on. But Twitter, I have a social group, but I also have a more business profile. And plus, there's the difference in language. The Twitter language is completely different than the Facebook language. Facebook tends to be more conversational. There's no short code. There's no unique language. It's just basically writing. And with Twitter, you have DMs and retweets and hashtags and things like that that don't necessarily, make any sense to your Facebook friends.
Well, and that was my daughter's point.
Right.
Was that, you know, people don't get it. They don't know what you're talking about because they can't follow it. And that's really why, at the end of the day, what matters is what are you trying to do in each medium? I mean, I'm almost looking at my blog now as a not just a blog, but it's also a website / blog is kind of how I've morphed it. And it's because there's a certain face that I want to present there, which is also why I took my tweets off the front page and put them on the blog page, because I don't necessarily want to have those front and center. And so I'm trying to project one image there, and then there's another one with Posterous and another one perhaps with Twitter, and it all depends on on what you're trying to deliver. So I think you're absolutely right, Phil.
Well, isn't Postgres, though? Postgres is really this whole live streaming. The whole concept of live streaming is everything goes in there, right? Everything. If you're somewhere and you take a picture, that goes into your Postgres. If you've got a thought and you tweet it, it goes into Postgres. If you have a blog post, you post it and it goes into Postgres. Am I reading the service wrong? Okay. So it's everything.
Well, you're emailing. You have to like consciously email something to Postgres to post it. So if I take a photo with my iPhone and I want to post it on Postgres, then I email it to post@postgres.com and it goes to my Postgres and then it gets pushed out to all my networks. And there's a new iPhone app. Postgres put out a new iPhone app, by the way, which is kind of interesting. It provides some additional options, like you can create a post and start sending photos to it, but then later, which is something you can't do it with email, with the iPhone app, you can then add like if you're in Barcelona someplace and you want a Barcelona post and you want to, you know, over the course of a week, you know, keep adding photos to that particular post instead of continually creating new posts, the iPhone app lets you do that, which is kind of slick.
Well, and here's where I really think that the power is going to end up lying. So imagine now that it's down the road and you're working on a client project and you're at a trade show and you're walking through an area, you know, a booth or something. Or in your case, Julio, that you're doing an article for the Pioneer Press and it's something that you want to continually update or have, you know, encapsulated in one article, all the stuff that you're seeing that's germane to that. So now you start to capture things and I, you know, if I'm collaborating with some other people, I'm able to identify maybe a collaboration engine that I'm using for the project, and you can send a photo there. So I'm at the trade show and maybe I take a video and I want to send the video in and have it go directly into the collaboration site, but maybe I also want to have it on my Postgres because it's generic. And maybe I also want it to go to Twitter because it's interesting. So I can pick and choose to, you know, if I have 10 services in there and I want that video to go to three of them, I can then identify that in the email. It's the way that you set up the send to. Isn't it a plus sign, like Twitter plus blog plus whatever? And so you do that as the email at posterous.com, and then it only goes to those three services. So that's what I find as the most powerful piece of this is it's all about inputs. It's all about the things that people are seeing, the things that they're coming across, and the ability to sort of pick and choose where you want those to go.
Well, what's going to happen, guys, when Google Wave finally comes to fruition? Does not Google Wave make that a redundant service? Isn't the whole concept of Google Wave to bring in all of your online communication inbox?
Well, there's something interesting that's happening on the web right now. You know, even before Google Wave has been publicly deployed, which is kind of real-time publishing. That's kind of what that whole Anil Dash post was about. You know, there's some technologies that are emerging. One of them has a weird name called PubSub Hubbub, which is out of Google. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it, but as I understand it, essentially these are tweaks, you know, to existing technologies like Atom, which essentially, you know, the upshot here is when you publish something, the people that are interested in this content are notified instantly. There's no polling, like if you're using an RSS reader, the RSS reader has to periodically poll, you know, for new feed content. This technology sort of eliminates that time delay problem because whenever you publish something, the people that are subscribed to you and that are interested in your content get notified automatically. Like for instance, that's already being deployed in Google Reader. If you share something in Google Reader, instantaneously, your friend feed followers find out about it. There's a video that shows a Google Reader and friend feed side by side. You share something in Google Reader, and bam, your friend feed is updated. FeedBurner, you know, has this capability now. You can click a checkbox, and people that are subscribed to your feed are suddenly getting your content in pretty close to real time. It's the real time web, or the push button web that Anil Dash is talking about, and all of this is just, you know, just starting to come on the scene. But it's very exciting because all this time delayed stuff is going away. You're no longer pulling content at irregular intervals. It's being pushed to you instantly. It's like push email, but, you know, for web content. It's very, you know, very, very exciting.
Well, can I interject? Because here's one of the places where I think it's really, to take your really exciting, I think it's really, really exciting. So when we did the live blogging at Blogwell, I embedded the Scribble Live iframe in a page on Minovate, and anyone looking at that page can then see the updates coming instantly. They didn't have to do any page refreshes, nothing. Well, now take that concept writ large on the web overall. So imagine that you had maybe it was a Google Wave container, maybe it was something else, another container, where anything related to the flow of a topic. So everyone who's posting something or tweeting something or doing anything with a hashtag, putting up Flickr images, tagging it on YouTube, whatever. What if you had one place where that flow was all coming into, and so you didn't have to go in and search for that tag. That tag was just flowing into a container of some kind. That's where I think the power is. Because if you can have the web, the net, automatically go out and pull in all these things that are tagged with some given hashtag, you're not going out and doing it. It's all coming to you. That's where ultimately I see, or updates. You know, how many times have you done an update to a blog post and you realize everybody reading this in Google Reader now is reading the old version? Because there's no update mechanism for RSS. That's where I think at the end of the day, that's where the power is really going to lie with this. And that's what really excites me.
Yeah. But yeah. Twitter is kind of an early example of kind of the real time web. And I laugh sometimes because sometimes it bites me in the ass because I'll post something to Twitter and I'm kind of a stickler about grammar and, you know, and spelling. And if I put out a tweet that has a misspelling or a grammatical error or something, I do my homework. I go, dope. And then I, you know, frantically, you know, try to delete it and repost it, but it's too late. It's already gone out. Everybody's already seen it. So it's kind of pointless.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's going to get interesting to see where this all ends up. Cause I think with WordPress, driving toward making it more and more of a social publishing platform. Drupal's doing the same thing. There are themes coming out. You can make your own private Twitter if you want with using WordPress as the engine, even though it's maybe not the right terminology. But but it's all about, we're putting our stuff all over the place and how great it'll be to be able to bring it all together. And speaking of stuff all over the place, that's not a good segue, Phil. I know Phil's my segue police, but
no, that's all right. It's
but,
brilliant.
I'm holding in my hand my iPhone and I'm also looking at my Google Voice page on the web. And I'm not really using Google Voice much because I'm waiting for the number portability and I'm wondering why that hasn't happened. And this whole brouhaha about Google Voice and Apple not allowing it to appear is all over tech meme. I mean, Apple answers the FCC questions and Google's thing. And Steve Gilmore posted today a post about Google, Apple, and Arrington, as though Arrington is a key player in this whole thing. But it's all about, you know, the kinds of things that they're doing to release the stranglehold that the mobile companies have on voice, which I think is really the overall strategy here. It's all about, you know, kind of breaking the back of telecom, monopolies and opening this up. Because I've often wondered, look at all the things you can do with Google Voice. Why is it that today the only way that I can modify my Quest telephony, and yes, we still have one landline. My wife refuses to give it up because it's powered if the power goes out. Why is it that we can't do anything with that landline except pick up the phone and dial some numbers in order to change features or to do things? There's no web interface. And I think the telecom companies have been sitting on their hands forever. You know, they don't care. They don't have to do anything. And here's Google that is offering this extraordinarily innovative service. So what do you guys think? I mean, do you think ultimately that's what this is all about?
Well, sure. This is about pushing back on control of, for lack of a better word, I mean, control of airwaves. It's it's been ever since they started, people started playing with phone numbers and fiddling around with phones, and the very birth of the web and hacking. I mean, it's all been about finding out a way to do free or cheap or low cost communication.
Well, I saw something that somebody wrote this morning. I'm trying to remember who it is now. About Apple really being afraid of how ubiquitous Google is on the iPhone, and how many services and how many people have signed up for Gmail but are using the mail client on the iPhone. And then he also talked about the world's, I think it's the world's largest data center that Apple is building down in North Carolina. And clearly they're going to move into hosted services and applications. And that, you know, maybe this was a stall tactic so that they don't lose too much ground to Google. Thought that was an interesting premise.
Yeah, and the big, the big news in the last 24 or 48 hours was Apple responding to the FCC inquiry about why Apple didn't approve the Google Voice app that Google wanted to put on the iPhone. And if you go to the Apple website, and Apple actually posted the full reply on its website for everybody to see, and it makes for very interesting reading because now Apple seems to be furiously backpedaling. It now says, oh, we haven't rejected the app, you know, we're still considering the app, you know, it's still up in the air kind of a thing, but you know, we're kind of, but it also says it's kind of unhappy with how from its point of view, Google Voice seems to duplicate or in fact cripple or disable, you know, services on the iPhone, telephony service on the iPhone, which is patently false. I mean, some of the stuff in there is it's death panel absurd.
Well, and the thing about the contacts that it could compromise the contacts on there, it's bullcrap. I mean,
that's the biggest falsehood right there. And right. Apple itself does that because in iTunes you can set up iTunes to your Mac contacts sync with Google. So it's accusing Google of doing something that it doesn't like, and it itself is doing it. So it's ridiculous.
You know, I'm really torn, but I got to tell you, at the end of the day, having Skype on here, I don't need to use Skype over 3G, although it would be a little bit easier because I also have Wi-Fi faux fum, so I can find open Wi-Fi hotspots just about any place that I happen to be at any moment in time, and then I can pull up Skype and I can make calls. And it really comes in handy when my wife's overseas, which she is about 9 times a year. I can call her for just, you know, pennies. But when I look at Google Voice as an example, being able to make calls through Google Voice, also you have extremely low international calling rates rather than try to dial with AT&T directly. And so that's a huge bonus, because it'd be a hell of a lot easier to use Google Voice than it would be to try to find a Skype location.
Yeah, exactly. And Google Voice is just more full. There's a lot more there. There's a very sophisticated voicemail system with transcription. It pulls in your Gmail contacts. It assigns you a phone number that essentially becomes your phone number for life. You can move anywhere or do anything. You can make that your phone number for the rest of your life, and you can make it sort of the center of your SMSing, because you can SMS on Google Voice as well as your voice activity. It's very I'm just waiting, because most of the people that I deal with, you know, via phone, just don't grok this Google Voice thing. I'm waiting for people to sort of get it, because right now I'm sitting on this cool technology that nobody I want to talk to on the phone really understands right now. So I'm still trying I'm basically in the process of training all my friends and family members into, you know, what Google Voice is about. I keep telling them, call this number and all my phones will ring, and they go, What are you talking about?
Well, you want to hear something really cool? So I'm talking to, and he shall remain nameless because he listens to this. He's got a startup here in the Twin Cities, and he told me something that I thought was absolutely fascinating. They are using Google Voice with one phone number, and then it automatically rings everybody on the team. There are 10 people on the team. Some have their Skype in phone numbers. Some have their mobile numbers. Others have landlines. And so everyone's phone rings simultaneously when that number is called. And if somebody answers it, whoever answers it gets the call. But then they have open chat all the time on their computers, and they'll just type in, "I got the call." And then they send that out to everyone. And so they know who got the call, and then they can say, "Oh, it's for you, Joe," and send the transfer the call over. And so they're using it like a PBX, which is just, I mean, because they're all virtual. They're not in the same location. And I thought, what an incredibly smart and fascinating way to use the technology.
But Google Voice, in my opinion, is still crippled, because you need to have the full capability to use it on the iPhone, which is, you know, the kind of the popular smartphone right now.
Right.
And with Uncle Sam, you know, this is a good example of Uncle Sam actually doing some good for a change. With its sort of subtle pressure on Apple, I predict within a month we're gonna have that Google Voice app on the iPhone at last. I certainly hope so.
Yep.
So what do we say then about what does that say? And believe me, this is very unlike me to say something like this fall on the side of big corporate America. But what does it say about Apple is a for-profit company, and it is their technology, it is their agreements, it is up to them to decide what they want to put on their product. What does it say to other companies that say, well, now basically the government can tell me what part of business I can be in and accept and not accept, and you know, what's the deal? Where's that competitive bent going?
Well, my take on that is let me back up. I think Apple sometimes is a very schizophrenic company, because sometimes you see Apple listening to its customers and giving its customers what they want, and sometimes Apple says, we know what is best. We're going to do it our way. We're going to keep it simple, keep it minimalist, and we're going to cut, you know, out of the equation anything we consider a threat, you know, to our minimalist jihad here. We're going to do it our way, and we're going
to
not.
That's a company's right, right? I mean, it really only has to answer to its stockholders.
Well, true, but my take on this is that Apple's customers want this. They're clamoring for this. They need this. This is a situation where Apple is saying, we hear our customers asking for this, but we think our customers, our little children customers, aren't best served by they're asking for this, but we're not going to give it to them because we don't think this is the right thing for them. We're going to make a decision for them that runs contrary to what they're asking for. It's not.
Well, they've been doing that for years with the iPod. I mean, what's the most requested addition to an iPod? FM radio. And they don't put that on there because why? They don't make any money off FM radio, so they don't include it in the iPod.
Yeah. As one of those people that loves Google Voice, wants to use Google Voice to its full potential on the iPhone. I'm pretty ticked off. So I guess I'm not being really impartial here. But the other thing is, if you're going to like deny your customers a particular feature, you know, come up with some good reasons, because the reasons that Apple is giving are just ridiculous, just riddled with misinformation and falsehoods. The reasons it gives for not putting that are just patently false, and that, you know, that is more annoying than anything else. So, but again, a little pressure from Uncle Sam is going to work wonders here.
So
I think.
What do you think? Would you leave Apple because you can't get Google Voice? Would you switch to a different provider and a different phone?
Well, you're talking to a guy who doesn't own a smartphone, so you may be asking the wrong guy. But I've heard at last count, I've heard two or three very, very prominent geek type guys on podcasts and things who have said, "I love the iPhone. I think Google Android is an inferior technology, but you know what? I depend on this Google Voice thing. I've built my business around Google Voice, and you know what? You know, a year from now, if I still don't have my Google Voice and my iPhone, you know, I'm gonna give serious consideration to ditching the iPhone when my contract runs out, and I'm gonna get an Android phone, because my Google Voice number is now my main business number. I need that. I need to use that its technology to its full potential on my handset. And if I can't do that on the iPhone, goodbye, Apple."
Let me just say that I want to play devil's advocate on these sort of situations too. I mean, because I'm a big fan of, you know, power to the people. Yeah. But at the same time, you got to look at it from a business standpoint too, from Apple's business standpoint. So, again, I think that I agree with Julio that the right amount of pressure comes to bear, then, you know, everybody will be all happy and we'll all be singing Kumbaya around the fire. So, I think it'll be good. I want to make sure that we kind of explore every angle to this, because remember, we are talking about a business, a company that is in business to make money, and they're beholden to their shareholders to make money the best way they can. And if that it happens to be, for whatever ill-conceived reason, to try to squelch somebody else's growth, then you almost think to yourself, well, if I've got stock in Apple, I expect them to do that to protect my number.
Well, you know what though, I think that it's so much more complex than that. And the reason I say that is that the collective us, who have an unprecedented opportunity to have our voices heard, whether that's in Twitter or whether that's in the Apple discussion boards. If you remember when Apple cut the price last year on the phone, and there was this just S storm of people, especially in the Apple discussion boards. And I know I even went there. And because they were off topic, the moderators were deleting them instantly by the hundreds. And people kept hammering and hammering and hammering. And Apple finally, you know, came out and said, you know, basically, sorry about that. And we're going to offer you a store credit. And you know, did it make everybody whole? No. But did it immediately deflated the balloon of controversy? Yes. Mm-hmm. But when I look at this with the whole government thing, is what's really pleasing to me is that the FCC is not a bunch of milquetoasts who are listening to the lobbyists like they were before, because the telecom lobbies and the cable lobbies were all up in, you know, front and center. And when we were at the Minnesota High Tech Association, I talked to the Comcast VP that runs the business group here, and also the government affairs guys, because I was being a little bit of a burr under the saddle of Comcast with respect to my rants on broadband, on Minovate and my own site. And they were really trying to, you know, talk about how they were doing the right thing and why should they be penalized for growth and doing all of this and so on, as though they had totally forgotten that all of the rights of way for them to string cable everywhere, mm-hmm. all those skids were greased by the government. You know, if they would have had to do it, they would have paid God knows what to get. It probably would have been impossible because everybody that knew that the cable was going to be strung would have, you know, held their hand out and the price would have gone up. And if the government hadn't gotten involved, the cable never would have gotten strung. And so, you know, now that they've become essentially an internet monopoly, you know, should the government say, hey, let's just let the free market decide? No. And it's the same thing with this. You know, Google's being watched pretty strongly right now because of the power and strength that they've been able to come up to. And like many people have said, God forbid that Apple had 93% market share of operating systems, because, you know, Jobs' control would be beyond human comprehension. And I'm a shareholder, so I like the fact that when he came back, the company took off. And I used to work for Apple, so, you know, there's significant interest there. But I also know that I'm also an open source advocate. So, yeah. You know, I think that
you've kind of touched on some interesting stuff that's really been brought about by enabling voices to be heard. And that's the great thing about what this space offers. And you talk about lobbyists were successful because they had access.
Yep.
And now, especially in the last year, we've been given unprecedented access, individual citizens, unprecedented access to, you know, a connection with our very own government. I mean, it's unheard of that, you know, we have access to data now that allows us to really be our own lobbyists. So, yeah, I think that you've hit on that. It's just this ability now to connect. We now have the ability to let our voices be heard, and our government has to listen. And just as they, you know, were fed expensive meals and had to listen to a pitch from a lobbyist, they now have to hear from us because we get to talk to them a lot.
Yep. And collectively. Absolutely.
And collectively. And it's all a matter of power. And I think what Google wheels, as far as what they're being watched mostly for, is because they have such control over data. Not that they have, become this monster because of access. It's the data they control, the data they have access to.
Yep.
You got to keep your eye on any company that has access to that much data on that many people.
Right. Exactly.
Speaking of voice stuff, it's interesting how to give an example about how much data Google has, its Goog 411 service, mm-hmm. which is kind of an interesting, directory assistance kind of a thing. But Google is taking every one of those calls and using that, you know, that archived speech from its millions of callers, and using that for repurposing that for other purposes. That's the basis and the future of its Google Voice Transcription Services. Google Voice Transcription Service, the accuracy of that service will increase largely, you know, due to its analysis of all these calls that have come into this Google 411 service. So information is coming in one place, and it's getting repurposed in a whole bunch of other places. And it's fascinating. It's also, you know, a little scary if you think about it.
Well, it is, but I also think about how amazing it is now that they're rolling out services like, I mean, they have had Google Trends, now they have Google Insight. And so if you're a marketer and an advertiser, you can actually go in and do some searching of keywords and seeing what the trends are with respect to whatever keywords you're putting in. I'll put this in the Google Insight in the show notes, but so they're rolling out a lot of new tools, but they're also at the same time not adding to tools like Google Analytics. I mean, I'm still frankly surprised and stunned that they haven't added any social media analysis component to Google Analytics, which I would love. I would love to be able to, you know, put in keywords, and because Google Alerts is really slow. Sometimes I'll get an alert, there'll be a blog post, and then like the next day, the Google alert will come in. You know, takes 15, 20 hours.
Oh, but Steve, I have news for you. Remember I was talking to you about PubSub Hubbub, you know, the whole real-time thing. Google alert support for PubSub Hubbub has just, I think literally within the last few days, been announced. So it's now, you know, Google alerts are now real time.
I did not know that. Cool. That's good. That's good.
I haven't actually tried this myself, but that's what I've read. It's now instantaneous.
I'm going to try it. Speaking of monopolies,
here comes another segue.
Yeah. one of the things that we'd kind of talked about was the upcoming Microsoft retail stores, you know, sort of offline. And Phil, you're a former primary Windows guy and now a Mac guy too.
And, yes, I go both ways.
You go both ways, and I run multiple OSs, and I'm not sure about you, Julio, but I've really been wondering about Microsoft retail stores and what they're really going to get out of it other than pushing the brand.
Well, I'll tell you, I was in San Francisco for Macworld Expo a couple of years ago, and I went to, and I can't remember what the name of it is, right near the convention center, there's this futuristic shopping mall.
Yes.
Crap, I can't remember the name of it. The Matreon, I think it's called.
Yeah. Sony's in there. And
there was, I think that it's gone now. There was a Sony store in there. And I think this is a cautionary tale for Microsoft, because I think Apple has pulled off something with its Apple retail stores that it's very difficult for any other company that doesn't have products, you know, quite as sexy as Apple does to really succeed. Because that place was deserted. That Sony store was just completely, it was a tomb. And to answer your earlier question, I also, you know, go both ways. I use Windows and Mac interchangeably. I have Windows Vista installed in a partition out of my iMac and the whole thing. But, you know, as somebody who kind of prefers the Mac and has really admired what Apple has done with the retail stores, I'm deeply skeptical that this can be duplicated. And Apple, I'm sorry, Microsoft is a company that does that. They just duplicate, copy stuff. They copy this, they copy that. They don't do a lot of innovation. They just take something that somebody else has done and try to copy it.
Yeah.
And in this part, retail's a tough business. It's very hard. It's very hard to pull off a successful retail situation, as you know, with the gateway stores, which are no more. And I think Microsoft is going to have a tough time.
Well, and looking at that Gizmodo post that came out in July, that Lippincott, the design and brand strategy consultant firm, had done a proposal and it got out, and Gizmodo published it with all the photos, and they had a Guru Bar, which they've now changed the name of, and you looked at it and it was like, oh my God. And it was a compare and contrast to, here's what Apple's done, here's what we think you should do, here's what Apple's done, here's what you should do. And it was really amazing with respect to where the original ideas, other than, you know, stuff like the Microsoft Surface table, which I would go into the store just to play with that. But other than that, I mean, what else is really in there I'm skeptical too, Julio.
But on the plus side, apparently some job descriptions have been published on the web, and apparently one of the requirements, you know, for working at the store is you have to be able to lift 75 pounds. That was kind of an interesting job requirement. But what that tells me is the Microsoft stores apparently are going to be unlike the gateway stores, were just kind of show pieces. You go in there, you poke in product computer and say, this is nice. Now I have to go back to my home computer and order it on the web. I can't buy it at the store, which is really stupid approach. The Microsoft stores, as I'm surmising, you know, from that job description is they're going to, you're going to be able to like carry product out of the store, which is a crucial ingredient. I mean, a store shouldn't be a museum. It should be a place where you can go in and actually buy something. So if they do that, you know, at least in that sense, they're kind of on the right track.
Yep. Well, it should be interesting to see how this.
And maybe all their staff members will be these young women in glasses with red hair, you know, jumping up and down. So.
Yeah, coming to buy a $500 computer. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. All right, so we should probably wrap up, but and talk about some local events first. But before we do that, what is with the sudden uptick in Twitter, Skype, and email porn? honest to God, I mean, I
haven't noticed it, Steve. I think it's just you.
Thanks, Phil.
No, I agree. I spent a good part of the day yesterday reporting spam to Twitter.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's besides everybody having a pitch, I'm followed by realtors and, you know, all kinds of stuff, but it's this Jessica 1795, you know, and and it has zero followers. And
I think we went to school together.
Yeah, right, right.
But you know what's really annoying? There's this thing on Twitter sometimes where you'll tweet something and then the tweet will be replicated by other people again and again and again. They're tweeting it as if it was their tweet.
Yep.
Like I tweeted, I forget what I tweeted about, but this tweet at last count has been replicated, you know, several dozen times. It's really super annoying.
Well, and then somebody's figured out, because it's happened to me now several times. Somebody's figured out how to look at keywords. So I did one where I was trying to be humorous, which of course I'm not. I was trying to be funny in this particular tweet, and I said something about a unicorn, and instantly came a tweet saying blah blah blah. Here's all about unicorns, and with a link. And so somebody had something set up for a keyword that instantly then did an at reply. And I've had that happen to me now about a half a dozen times just in the last couple of weeks. That's why, you know, it's not just porn, it's all this other stuff. And it's one of the things that I think will absolutely kill Twitter is if that automated crap starts to happen and happen frequently, because it's hard enough now to watch the river of tweets coming through of people that you genuinely want to follow. And if all of a sudden you're inundated by all these scammers and spammers and goofballs that are trying to send all this crap to you, it's going to kill it.
Apple, Twitter, to its credit, does, you know, periodic purges. They'll go and mass delete accounts with suspicious activity. So every so often, my follower count will plunge by order of hundreds. So to their credit, you know, they're trying to do something about that. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what precisely why I don't, if a Twitter spammer follows me, more often than not, I'll just ignore it, because at some point I know Twitter will just kind of nuke the account. So.
Yep.
You have such faith. You have such faith.
I am an optimist. Go. I am an optimist.
You are an optimist.
Well, Phil,
let's talk briefly just so before we wrap up, because we have what did you guys think about Mini Demo going to MIMO? It sort of struck me as kind of an odd fit, but at the same time, you know, anytime we can get somebody to notice the some of the innovations that are coming out of the city and the area, I think it's great. But it did sit like, is that really the right forum for that?
Well, that was kind of what I thought, too. I was a little bit... See, on the one hand, you know, if you've got a great offering, you want to be in front of people who can see it and say, hey, I'd like to take advantage of that. Or maybe we can leverage that for our business or whatever. So it's not just we're pitching to a bunch of geeks. And I noticed that Mini Demo, there were more and more people that were starting to come that were not necessarily out of geekdom. So that was one thing that I saw as actually a positive. Mm-hmm. And then I saw what was happening, you know, with the Ignite events and all of that. And those are, you know, usually in larger venues. But then I saw some comments on a couple of geek sites that people were sort of taken aback. One guy in particular who had actually demoed at a Mini Demo was taken aback about the fact that the Mini Demo at MIMA was positioned as the best of Mini Demo. And he of course was not on that list.
Right.
So.
Well, it was positioned. I think the verbiage was from Mini Demo as sort of a best of.
Yeah.
And I don't know that, I don't think there was any ill will intended there. It was sort of an offering of things.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. Maybe it'll be a positive to have a wider audience.
It's always good to have a wide audience. I just think you make sure that you stay on task and focused on what your mission is. So, and their mission is marketing. So,
right,
whatever works.
Right. Well, maybe these startups will get some help. Maybe there'll be more attention and focus on the startup community in Minnesota, which is obviously our objective. And then we have SMB, Social Media Breakfast, next week at the State Fair.
Ta-da!
Yeah. Phil, are you going to be able to make it?
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it this year, but
yeah, I was afraid of that. Around,
but, we'll see what we can do.
Yep. And Julio, you're going to be there.
I'm going to check it out. Yeah. I always make a point to go to the State Fair. I make a holy pilgrimage to my favorite pita eatery place, which is right inside the main entrance. I forget what it's called, but they have these Middle Eastern pitas. Always make a holy pilgrimage to that. And, now the State Fair is on my itinerary as well.
Fabulous. Well, so not only am I going to go, but my daughter, Biz, of course, she's in the social media realm, so she's going to go. And she made a pitch last night to my wife and son that they should show up as well, maybe go to the SMB and we can all walk around together afterwards. So maybe we'll make a day of it for the family. So
wow, that should be kind of fun. The whole Borscht family in one spot.
That's right.
Incredible.
I know. We'll see.
That's better than a lot of rides.
Yeah, that is. Well, Michelle will make one pilgrimage over to the corn thing. They do the husk corn and they roast it in the husk and then they dip it in butter and hand it to you. Ooh. Forget the treats and the cotton candy and donuts and all that. That she makes a beeline for the corn. So that should be, that's not even on a stick. What's up with that?
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. Well, listen, have a great weekend, you guys, and thanks for carving out the time this morning.
You betcha.
All righty.
Julio, take care of yourself. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate it. You too.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Come, and I like it like that.
I like it like that.
Yes, I like it like that.
I like it like that.
You know, it's a whole lot of fun just being in the sun. Go ahead, son.
I like it like that.
Oh, yeah. I like it like that, though.